Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. This is Tall Paul on the Ask Tall Paul radio show. And tonight I have a very special guest, Joey D'Elia, who is a permaculture expert in my region. He's becoming world-renowned for sure. And for those of you who know the big names out there, you watch out. Joey is going to be world-renowned before you know it. Anyway, I like to give him a hard time because he's my good friend, and I'm very glad to have him here tonight to share with you something that I'm relatively new at myself. I think most of you have heard so far that, you know, about 5 years ago, I started to grow fruit trees. And that same year, you know, I knew I needed to get the fruit trees in the ground because they take the longest to grow. And I also wanted to grow vegetables, but I didn't have a lot of confidence with that. I didn't have any training. I didn't know what to do. And so I had a little bit of fear, but I'm like, well, what the heck? So I went to Home Depot and I bought some tomato plants. I went down to the furthest part of my property and stuck the tomatoes in the ground, and they had water. A couple weeks later, I'm like, oh, I think you're supposed to have a tomato cage. A cage so that tomatoes can grow up. So I went to the store and I bought some cages, and I went back down to the tomatoes, and they were so big, I couldn't get the tomatoes into the cage. So I'm like, oh, I just won't have tomatoes, because my thought was tomatoes wouldn't grow unless you had a cage. This is how much I knew about gardening. I didn't know much at all. So literally a month later, maybe a month and a half later, I go back down there, and I look, and there are at least 300 perfectly organic, not one bug, beautiful tomatoes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can grow tomatoes. Like, this is incredible. I didn't do anything but put them in the ground, and Mother Nature took care of the rest. And so that really helped me with my confidence. And the next year, what do you think I grew? I grew more tomatoes, but this time I grew many types. I think I grew 23 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. And it just so happens where I live, tomatoes are very, very easy to grow. The second year, I grew onions and carrots and, you know, branched out into other things. And so, you know, this is what I've been doing for the last 5 years. Well, 1 year ago, I saw a posting on the web. There's a website called meetup.com, and there was a group, and meetup.com is for groups of people that are interested in, you know, they have common interests. So if you're into reading, or let's say you like to do yoga or something like that, people can join together and have different meetups. So I saw this thing called permaculture, and I had heard about it. I didn't know much about it, and I'm like, well, I want to do this right. So I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to go to this meeting. I was intimidated because I didn't really know anything about it, but, you know, what the heck. So I went, and that night I met Diego, who is the leader of our group. He started this permaculture meetup group in our area. And then Joey was there, and another person named Paul and his son Joe. And so there were, I believe, five of us the first night. And so Joey was one of the people, and we each kind of told about where we were, what we were doing in our land, and Joey had something called a swale, and I actually knew what a swale was. I was very impressed. I'm like, wow, this guy is incredible. He has a swale? So anyway, that being said, we've become very good friends in the last year, and Joey not only has a swale, he does the work of 10 people, can't sit still, but he loves to talk. So we'll have to see if we can get a word in edgewise here. But what do you think of that, Joe? Are you going to let me talk tonight? Or?
Well, if you're really nice, we'll think about letting you talk. But Paul has been very active in at our little farm since we met, and it's been a really great relationship having Paul come in and support us and look to us to give guidance, and at the same time giving his good guidance. So I've asked him a lot of questions. It may not all have to do with gardening, but he's helped me out a lot and proceeding in nice ways with working with people and caring more about what's going on with all different kinds of relationships, with whether they're with the plants or the people and different systems that are going on our at our facility.
And I think that's a very good point, is like Joey has a website, there's a website called permies.com. So someone into permaculture is called a permie. So Paul Wheaton, who's the Duke of Permaculture, right, Paul? Anyway, Paul Wheaton has the permies.com. And so Joey and I were talking, well, what would be a good website for Joey? And so he has a website called Dirty Permies, because Joey gets down and dirty in the dirt. If he's not working hard down in the soil and, you know, using his hands, he's really not using, you know, that's his best asset there, is he works so hard. But I'm not too good at that. I mean, I like watching Joey work, but actually, you know. So anyway, Joey has several different websites now, and we're going to start changing that Dirty Permies, and he's starting a nonprofit organization. A lot of wonderful things are happening, but we're really getting way ahead of the story here. We haven't told you what permaculture is yet. The topic of today's episode is Going Green, Creating Sustainable Systems Using Permaculture. So when I started my story, I kind of gave you a clue of what not to do. And that is, I planted my tomatoes at the furthest part of my property. The question is, why would that be a bad idea? And I'll let Joey go on from there.
So we could say it's not the best idea unless you like to get a little exercise every time you want to check on your tomatoes. Usually when we're looking at a permaculture as a design science, we're thinking about conserving energy in different ways. And one of the ways when we're looking at gardening, doing our vegetable gardens and these types of things, is how many trips do you make to the vegetable garden, and how often do you want to pick the fruit or just check on the plants? And lots of times I've done this myself at one point in my life, is putting the garden a little bit further, kind of like Paul did with his tomato plants, and ended up kind of neglecting those things because they were a little bit further away and I didn't go there that often. So when we look to design a system, or we're just designing a garden and we want to grow food, we look at putting it really close to where we walk a lot, or if we can put it outside a kitchen window, maybe we spend a lot of time in the kitchen cooking and doing these things. If you can look out at your garden, you can be more part of it, and you'll be going out into it because it's closer. And lots of times, if you can make your garden somewhere where you have to walk through, somewhere where you have to walk to get to the front door or the back door, or maybe the garage or something like that, and your garden is, your vegetable garden is within that zone or in that area, you'll be gaining an intimate relationship with your food.
That's right. So like at my house, I drive into my driveway, and you go into, you know, to get to my front door, you have to pass by my front yard. I go to my front yard almost daily because I pass through it daily. My backyard, I might only go once a week. And the bottom part of my property, I mean, I rarely go. And the times that I would want to go there is when there's something in season. So in the furthest part of my property now, because I've learned about what we call zones in permaculture, is that, so you're inside the house is zone zero. So you're not, you know, you stay inside the house. Some people, if you have a condo or an apartment, you can grow food indoors. And, you know, you can grow something in the window. Some people even set up, you know, like lighting, and you know, that's really up to you what you want to do. But that's like, they sell these herb pots at the store. You know, you can buy an herb pot and grow rosemary or basil right there on the counter. That's very convenient because that's where you're cooking. Now, right outside your door is zone one. Zone one, you're spending your most time. And so I think that that's really what I've had to learn is you do not, especially me, because I'm lazy. Hey, I don't want to plant tomatoes at the very bottom of my property, which is on a hill that I only visit, you know, every couple of weeks. So that's definitely something that I learned because of this permaculture. So
Paul made a good point when he's on a small suburban lot. When he passes through his front yard, or when I come to his house, you can see many of the fruit trees he just has in his front yard, even his different strawberry plants. Every day we go up to the front door here at his house, how are those apples doing? Oh, how are those mulberries doing? You get to look at them and constantly get to see at what stage they're at, and you can get it's a great thing, and it's a fun way to grow your food and to start to be more of a part of what you eat, and to put it that much or that close to you, it becomes a much more intimate experience, and it's something that encourages you to go further and to keep working a little bit more at it, because you get a lot of positive feedback from setting up some of your food growing systems like that. Or even if we were just talking about growing flowers, using that, you say you enjoy your flowers a lot, just putting some of your favorites by a place you walk often, which many of you might have done already, is the same kind of idea if we're going to go into growing different foods. It's you're putting the things like that close to you, where you spend most of your time, and so you can gain the most enjoyment out of them and use economy of motion. And then you make things more efficient. And ideally, as you practice that, it moves into different aspects of your life, and we look at a more holistic way of living through applying the permaculture design techniques, which are a lot to do with energy and understanding, looking at the way nature works too. Nature is very efficient at the way its energy is set up, the way things grow, the things that partner up, the way trees grow with bushes and bushes grow with smaller plants, and the different birds and animals that live at different layers and in different environments within those natural systems. And we start to kind of, think about that and kind of put our life in order like nature puts things in order. And we start to find a balance and a real happiness as we practice that. And a permaculture design can give you a way to understand it and to study it. And you can take small steps to a almost infinite kind of way of living and designing your life and your landscape.
Definitely. And permaculture is not just about gardening. It's creating these sustainable systems which can, you stack layers. So you repurpose items that, you know, that have served multiple functions. Now, in the beginning, when you're a newbie like me, I'm not so much a newbie now, but I've certainly learned a lot in the last year. You know, in the beginning, you think, oh my gosh, you know, how could I possibly do all that? And my message is, don't worry about it. Just start where you're at and add one thing. Try one thing, and then you can do the next thing. It's about building confidence and understanding where you live, looking at the environment, learning, speaking to local people in your area, coming to this radio show. We're going to hopefully have these on a regular basis, and you can call in and ask questions. And Rome wasn't built in a day. So you start with today. What can I do today to be more sustainable? So if you're not recycling yet, your aluminum and your plastics and things, start recycling. There's three what we call ethics within the permaculture. And so, Joey, why don't you talk about those ethics if you want, and why we start with the ethics, and that kind of helps us understand what this whole permaculture is about.
Well, yeah. So I'd love to talk about the three ethics that a man, Bill Mollison, when working with David Holmgren, they came up with a good outline and a good way to approach this kind of lifestyle and this kind of permanent culture. That's where we get permaculture. We're looking to work on a designing and implementing something that can go on and be a permanent kind of system, but a culture where it's something we practice and carry on and pass on to further generations. And with that, we put an ethical component in it and come up with the three ethics, which are earth care, people care, and return of surplus. So when you just start out and you look at, I want to do this and I want to do that and all these things. Well, how does that relate to care of the earth care? So you start, like Paul had mentioned, recycling. So if that's the place we start at, that's the place we start at. And then it may move into, maybe I can monitor a little bit how long my showers are. Or maybe I can get a more efficient washing machine. Or I can drive a little bit less and ride a bike or take transit systems. You start to think about the ways that you can save energy or save resources that help care for the earth. And that's an infinite subject in itself. Plenty of fun to have there. And then you look, that feeds into the next ethic, because when you're taking care of the earth, you inevitably are taking care of people. Because people live on the earth and we use its resources to keep our bodies alive. And when you start to take care of the earth, therefore you're taking care of people. But then if you look at just the people care, you start to understand, how do we care for people? People, it's ideally that people eat healthy food. So thinking about some kind of growing systems that can grow food for us in a healthy, holistic way is something to look at. And then when you start taking care of people and you're taking care of the earth, lots of times if anybody out there has ever grown a zucchini plant, it's a very good example, because you can see a little zucchini growing. You come back in 3 days and you've got a giant zucchini. And that giant zucchini becomes 5 zucchinis. Pretty soon you have so much zucchini, you have a surplus. And you may not be able to eat all that zucchini. So you give a zucchini or two to a friend, a relative, to somebody. And you're taking that surplus and you're returning it to the first ethic, which is earth care, or you're returning it to the second ethic, which is people care. And in that way, you start to look at that simplistic framework of those three ethics, and they all feed into each other and help you kind of come up a way to bounce off ideas and progress through the different methods that you may use to try to apply permaculture design.
And I think that no matter what step you take, anything you do, no matter how small or big it is, you are already starting to take care of the earth because you're conscious of your actions and every little bit helps. And then you start to be, what else can I do? I did that. Now I can, you're constantly wanting to grow. And this whole, the one thing that I didn't expect was the people aspect of it. Because, I went to this meeting and I'm like, do I really want to meet new people? And, what kind of commitment is this going to take? And I'll tell you what, I have met the most interesting people. And it's only been 1 year. I've met literally hundreds of people through this permaculture movement. We have local training in San Marcos, California. We both live in the San Diego area. Joey has a demonstration site for permaculture. But there's been local convergences where people come from all over the nation and to learn about permaculture and to learn about these different concepts out there. And among it, a community is building. And so around us, we're fortunate because there's several people that are really starting to get into it. When you go to an event, you'll see people that you saw at the last event. You actually look forward to, you know, not only seeing the people, but then helping. So like Joey has classes one weekend, someone else will have a class at another site another weekend. And then Joey was just telling me this, was it this last weekend or very recently, this lady, you said there was a permaculture blitz.
Oh.
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't there.
It was fun. We started a permaculture San Marcos, what we call it. That's the city we live in. And we put it out there as a community gardening group. And anybody's welcome to come. We meet at the local library. And so we had our first meeting, and we had a good show of people. And we all talked about gardening and kind of introduced ourselves. And it came out quickly that people were in need of gardening help, you know, some extra hands in the garden. And one woman had left her husband maybe a year ago, and so she wanted extra help, or she could use some hands in the garden, and we all went up to her place, and we did what's in the permaculture world is called a permablitz. So we just went in there and totally rebuilt one of her pretty large garden beds. Her design is to use straw bales as a wall for a raised garden, and putting gopher wire for her big gopher problems, and we rebuilt the whole bed, and she was so happy. But would have probably taken her maybe a week, I think she said, or maybe 2 weeks. We did right then and there, and we got it done. And when we left, it was ready for her to plant her plants in, and it was very rewarding. And we have since then we're starting to schedule more of them within our group, and we haven't even had our second meeting yet. And it's really looking positive.
I mean, it's incredible. So like, you know, people are helping people with having no expectation of return. That's part of giving back of the surplus. Now, the surplus was the time and energy.
Well, that the surplus is, I forgot to mention that we went there, and she had more than she could eat just out of her existing garden. Mm. Everybody that came walked away with seeds, onions, a lot of greens. Everybody walked away with something. She returned the surplus she had immediately, and we had a surplus of energy, and we gave back to her. And it was a very, very beautiful thing, and a very sustainable type of thing when we can depend on each other and help each other, even though we all only met one time, but we have something in common.
And I've heard of other movements. It's not necessarily permaculture, but I think it's important to include this in the design aspect, is like, you know, we're basically take an inventory or a map of what you have. What are your resources available to you? And then step outside a little bit and do the outward zones. So in your neighborhood, like if you have an orange tree, it's impossible for you to eat all of your oranges. And if you have one, you know what I'm talking about. They drop on the ground, and you know, it's just hard to keep up with it. Your neighbor might have a lemon tree. Someone else has an apple tree. I know there's at least one organization that's starting to go out into the communities and map out where these different trees are. And you know, when the fruit's ripe, they go and they have volunteers that come and they'll pick the fruit, they'll share it with the owner of the tree, and then all the volunteers get fruit to take home. And then they take the rest of the surplus and they donate it to, you know, the local food banks and the, you know, different charities that help the poor, you know, to feed the hungry. And my gosh, if we could just start with that, we haven't even done any work yet. So I think it's a lot easier than people know, and it's just a matter of educating yourself and learning about it, talking to others, and just getting started. So if it just means going to your local hardware store or plant nursery, get some vegetable starts. So that means, you know, the nursery's already started to grow the seeds for you. You put a little hole in the ground and you stick it in. And that's pretty much all it needs except for water and sun. Right, Joey?
Yep, and you can see what happens from there.
Now, I have another story. I thought Joey talked a lot. Listen to me. Jeez. I have a friend, and he spends thousands of dollars, and he might be listening to this, I don't know, on bicycles. I mean, his hobby is bicycling, and, you know, he spares no expense to enjoy his hobby. So he bought, like, a two-acre property or thereabouts, and I'm like, hey, you know, you should really start planting some fruit trees. And he said, well, how much are they? And I'm like, well, you can get them a bare root tree for $20. He's like, $20? That's ridiculous. And I'm like, what? You spend thousands of dollars on your bicycles. What are you talking about? He says, well, I enjoy the bicycles. I'm like, well, have you tried the fruit trees yet? And so he knew he had this property and he wanted to do something with it. So we went to the local nursery and we did a tour. And what's great about where we live in Southern California, you can go to a nursery and literally there'll be 300 varieties of fruit and you can try all the fruit you want to taste it. And you're like, wow, that I can grow that here. So we went shopping, we bought some trees, and now, like, he's almost as bad as I am. Like, I'm a seed, I get seeds galore on the web, and I'm out of room with fruit trees. Like, where I live, I just have a standard, you know, home in the city, and I've used every little bit of space that I can to put fruit trees in. And believe it or not, at one point, I had about 70 different varieties of fruit. And that includes strawberries and, you know, little things that you can grow on the ground. But and some of them were in containers. So I ran out of room. So I had to put some trees over at Joey's house. I'm like, Joey, would you mind if I bought some trees?
And, poor me.
You know, grew them at your house. He's like, well, I guess, you know. And I said, well, how many? And he says, as many as you want. I'm like, okay, are you sure? Anyway, we're having fun. And this January, we planted a whole slew of all kinds of different fruit trees and nut trees and berries. And we're both so excited because we're seeing, you know, the first year you don't get fruit on a lot of them because you're not really concerned about that. It takes, you know, the second year, like I last year planted some apple trees in my front yard, and all five of those apple trees have apples on it. And this is June, and Joey and I literally just ate apples off my tree that were delicious, right?
They were good.
On the second year in the ground, I think that's a miracle. I mean, it's just incredible.
We live by the beach, and normally a lot of those apples, they want a lot of chill hours or they need a lot. And we've got some good tasting sweet apples growing on the...
That's right. And there's someone in Riverside, California. Do you know his name?
I forgot.
Yeah. There's a guy who has a passion for apples. And apples, when you talk about fruit, usually fruit needs to have what are called chill hours. So it's a certain number of hours that particular type of fruit likes to have in order to be sweet. And they measure it in the number of hours per year. Well, apples are notorious for needing lots and lots and lots of chill hours. So the more cold it gets in the winter, the longer duration of cold, the sweeter and the more crisp the apples are later on, you know, when you eat them in the rest of the year. Well, this gentleman in Riverside, California has a passion for apples, and he is trying to prove that these chill hours are a bunch of you-know-what. And you know what? He's right. Because, like, one of the apples is called a Honeycrisp, which I don't know the exact number of hours, but literally it's within the thousands of hours. It was developed, I think, in Minnesota, and he has successfully grown Honeycrisp apples in Riverside, California, which is boiling hot, not cold at all. And he said they're delicious. So that's the other thing. Anyone that says that they're an expert in gardening, organic gardening, they'll all tell you, I learn something new all the time. And, you know, you just have to try it in your area. Don't be afraid. and you're going to learn. We're kind of, I mean, permaculture is a very broad subject. There's so many things we can talk about. Today, you know, my goal is just kind of to get people to understand that anybody can do it. You don't have to be an expert. And the way to start is just to start. Listen to our show, and then, you know, you can ask your questions and go. So earlier I mentioned this thing called a swale. And someone wrote in before the show, and she asked about a swale. And I told you that I was very impressed because this Joey guy has a swale in San Diego. So what the heck is a swale? And I'll ask the question later. So describe what a swale is and why we would want one in Southern California.
Swale. A swale, we can define it as a level ditch on contour. So that would be, have you ever seen those contour lines on a topographical map? Those lines show a level area on the side of a hill, and they say like 100 or 200 or 15,000 or something of that effect. Well, those, imagine digging a ditch along one of those lines, and then that would be that ditch with all the dirt that came out of the hole gets thrown downhill into a little mound. Well, when you have that ditch across that contour, the water during a heavy rain, let's say for instance down here in Southern California, we don't get much rain, but when it does come, it comes a lot at one point, one time kind of. That swale would be along a slope and would stop that water in the ditch itself. And the water would either flow into it from some other source or just from over the landscape going into that swale, into that ditch. And because it is level on the bottom, the water doesn't race around anywhere. It just kind of stops and it fills up. And it's very passive now because water, I'm sure everybody's seen different things and floods and different parts, different morphologies of water moving through different areas. It can be very rapid and destructive. But the swale actually slows the water down and it gathers in the bottom of that ditch, that swale, and then soaks into the ground. And that's what a swale is, and that's the idea of a swale, is to just stop the water there and have it soak into the ground instead of just racing down the landscape. And in most cases, what I'm talking about is a landscape that's been degraded. Not like going up on a hillside where there's native brush everywhere and putting a swale in. I'm talking about some areas that have been deforested, or the brush has been taken down, or sites like that where a construction has been done and everything's been ripped off, and or the area has just been degraded to just a large amount of weeds and things. Going in there and installing some of these water harvesting
techniques,
elements.
Yeah, and so most of us, like I live in the city, you know, and we're surrounded by concrete, and probably most of you are too. So, you know, a swale can be tiny, it can be huge. So, like in my house, I don't have a swale. But if you think about what he's describing is the exact opposite of what cities try to do. Cities, you know, they take the water from the roof, it hits the concrete, goes down into the street, into the storm drain, and they swish it out to the ocean, at least in California. And all that water, which is so precious, we hear about the drought all across the nation, the water is being taken away instead of letting it lay exactly where it falls. So the whole point of these swales is to slow the water down. Don't let it go out into the streets. Let the water go in, and it just sort of captures the water, and it slowly penetrates into the soil. And eventually, the water table below can raise up, you know, over time. And as you begin to develop your land where you have, see, bare soil is not a good thing. And we always have people that go out and they pull their weeds and they, you know, it's just pretty funny because permaculture is kind of the opposite of what we do. Like, we pay gardeners to come and trim the trees, cut the grass, and they take all that material and they take it away to the dump. Permaculture is the opposite. You don't want to get rid of that stuff because that, for one thing, all that grass and all the leaves from your trees grew from the soil on your property. And it's taking the nutrients from your soil. And when you cut it and take it away to the dump, where are the nutrients going? It's leaving your land. So in permaculture, you can reuse all of that, and it will help to build the soil, etc. So in Southern California, water harvesting, and it's anywhere in the world really, is really important. And so Joey had a swale, and I'm like, well, I don't think a swale would pretty much work where I'm at, but what I did is I decided to harvest water, the rainwater. And so I bought two tanks to capture the water from my roof. And I had them installed on a Friday. And literally overnight it rained. And I have two 865 gallon tanks. And the water fills both tanks at the same time. So in one night, I was able to capture, both tanks filled halfway, so about 865 gallons of water. I was tickled pink. It's the best decision I ever made was to buy those tanks because I feel like I am doing my part to take care of the earth. My fruit trees love the rainwater because all of our city water has chemicals in it. This is water straight from Mother Nature. And that's something like that you can do. You can go to any hardware store. They have the rain barrels that you can put right under your existing water spouts, you know, from the roof.
Something Paul did that I think that's interesting on his site here at his house was he didn't put swales in his backyard, but he has a very steep slope.
Yeah.
Right out, I mean, maybe I would say 15 feet outside his back door is a steep slope, and a lot of the neighboring houses all have these amazingly steep slopes behind in their backyards. So what he did was he put in terraces. Now these are, he made them with wood, and they step down this steep hillside, which is probably maybe 75 feet long, this area down the hill, and he stepped it. He what we call terrace, but with a raised bed system, and he terraced that. Now, essentially, when he made that area stepped like that, when the rain does fall, it falls and stays on those level steps. And that is a harvesting technique that changed the dynamics of that slope instead of just being everything, when in a heavy rain, everything just racing down that slope into a cement drain that they engineered into this housing development that just gathers the water and it goes off to this one dump point somewhere further away. Now, a vast majority of that water that falls in his backyard right there stays right there and penetrates the soil and basically washes that soil and replenishes it with a high-grade water, which is rain.
Yeah, it's another way to slow the water down.
That's right.
And capture water. So the more surface area you have, the more water you capture. And it's incredible how much you can collect. Because my roof, I'm not harvesting all the water off my roof. And basically it's because I don't have much space to, you know, have these storage tanks. If I had more space, I'd probably have more storage tanks.
Well, yeah, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this little number
calculation.
Here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is when you have 1,000 square feet and you have 1 inch of level rainfall that falls on that 1,000 square feet, it is 630 gallons. I'm not exactly sure, but let's say 600 gallons of water is representative in that 1 inch of rain on 1,000 square feet. Now, our average here is 12 inches. So it could range anywhere from 6 inches for a year. We could have 6 inches of rain, or we could have 20 inches. There's variations there, but on an average of 12 inches, that's many, many gallons of water. You can start to think about those things, and it starts to give you an appreciation for how much rain is actually falling and how what we can do to harvest it. And I do want to digress a bit back to the idea of permaculture design. And let's say you're not that interested in gardening yet, or you aren't. Part of going green, you can be totally interested in something that doesn't have to do with gardening and be going green. You can be very into energy systems because we all use energy. So in that growing the green, going green, that and that idea, and looking at permaculture design has some heavy aspects of how you build your homes, where the sun travels through the sky, because that's our main energy source. And so I have some friends that are more techies, I guess you could say. We just had a class at our farm, at Tipiwana Farm, with two guys, Off-Grid Pro, and Jared and Troy, and they were demonstrating gasification, taking wood and turning into making wood gas to run a generator to create electricity. So there's so many different, this is what I want to send home, is that there's so many different facets. And like Paul talked about too, is permaculture just design is just not about gardening. It's the whole enchilada. It's how you live in your home, how you drive, where your energy comes from. Can you use less energy, or can you produce energy with solar panels, or all these different things? And there's a whole host of things, even working on the computer, how you use the computer and how the computer can be used to be more even energy efficient in our lives, and how we use that energy. There's just, it's fascinating, and it's holistic. We're not just talking about gardening like Paul said. We're talking about the life. And life as we live it right now, life in our houses that we all have, life with our computers, life with our smartphones, life like we're living, not going back to the olden days, but understanding all these energies and using them responsibly and trying to see the full potential of all the different elements that are in our lives already.
Right, and we each have a role in that. So one person might be totally passionate about gardening. Like for me, I love to grow fruit. Fruit. It's fun.
Yes.
I also grow these tomatoes, and I don't even like tomatoes, everybody. Last year, I grew 23 varieties of tomatoes. I don't like tomatoes to eat, but I love to share tomatoes with people. All right.
I like tomatoes.
But the other thing I do is I can. So I know I learned how to make ketchup and tomato sauce, spaghetti sauce, and I could can it. And I also give them as gifts and things. So that's a skill that I can teach other people. And there's everyone has a role here. So you might be into energy, or you might be into recycling. It's, I think there's something
just like, and you take care of people so well, and then you bring them over, and then somebody else shows them how to garden. It's a whole thing, and it's really fun, and because you get some people that don't know anything, like Paul said, anything about gardening, but man, you love them the minute you meet them, because they're so nice, and they're just happy, and they fulfill that part, just because we look at natural systems, going back to the beginning, natural systems have all different elements, and one tree doesn't do everything. There's a lot of trees, there's a lot of plants, there's a lot, and they're all doing something different in a forest. And when we look at a forest of people, the people are doing all different things. And it's a great thing, and it's something to appreciate and welcome into these systems.
Yeah, like, so one art, we have a friend I mentioned earlier, Diego. Diego and his wife are a great team. I think it's a perfect match there, because Diego's really good about organizing events and getting people to, you know, come and, you know, to be speakers at these different events. And his wife, her actual career was, you know, putting together trade shows and conventions and stuff like that. And coming in next March, March, they're
next
putting
year, yeah.
In 2014 already, they're putting on an amazing show.
Conference, a convergence at permaculturevoices.com. And it's a big time. They're going to have the big speakers coming in talking about regenerative design and about, I mean, you'd have to go to it to see. There's just the plethora of speakers is fantastic, and the things they're going to do talk about. And you can even go to YouTube and see a lot of those speakers already talking about what they're into and what they specialize in.
So the website for that is
permaculturevoices.com.
Yeah. So if you are at all, if you say you're into permaculture and you're not there next year, you're going to miss out. All right, because we have Jeff Lawton and all these enormous speakers coming.
Alan Savory.
Yeah.
Mark Shepard. I mean.
And the other thing is, if you've never been to Southern California, hello, come on down. We'd love to have you come to Tipiwana Farm. We'll give you a tour. And it's going to be very near to where this conference is going to be. So we highly encourage you to come if you can. And participate. If you can't come, but you want to help support it, I'm sure Diego would appreciate a donation. We haven't talked about it, but anyway, just visit the website at permaculturevisionsvoices.com and learn more about it. We're very excited about it, and hopefully you will be too. So that's kind of the thing that I always want to emphasize, is that every single person listening, we each have a different role in this whole thing, and it's just figuring out what are your skills, what you have to contribute, and you will, a lot of joy will come along with that. And I just think of, you know, what I've learned in the last year and how much fun I've had, the crazy people I've met, including Joey, right?
Maybe. I don't know, I might have to leave now.
No. So we have fun, right? And we actually have a website called permaculturefun.com. And right now it's just going to Joey's site. But I love it. I want him to say that more, because it's really fun. It doesn't have to be, like, serious. I mean, it can be serious.
The issues are serious that are affecting the world and humanity. But the solutions are fun.
Yes.
And when we practice them, we have fun and we share, and it's a very caring experience to bring people out and to explore all these new areas. I mean, we just had one of my friend's parents came over the other day. And we're kind of grown up guys, and his parents came over, and they hadn't been there before to our place. And his parents were like kids again, because there's plants everywhere, there's trees everywhere, chickens.
Oh, this girls?
Yeah.
Oh, my, I was there.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
My mother was like, oh, my gosh, it's just like camping. I want to, you know, and I'm like, well, you got to be here. And she's wearing high heels.
Yeah.
Walking.
They're in their dress outfits for work and looking very nice and appropriate, but they, and you could just see, and I guess Raul told me later, oh, his parents couldn't stop talking about it. And many different places you go to that start to do this. I mean, just coming to Paul's house is just like, you see these trees, you see this fruit hanging from it. You go, oh, it's our natural environment, and where we start gaining independence and thinking about providing whether it's our energy needs or our emotional needs, we start providing for those things, you know, that's involved in people care. But
the other thing is, what's the old saying? Many hands make light work. So I don't know, just in April, I think Joey was going to Australia to train under Jeff Lawton, who's like the premier permaculture guy on the planet. And Joey went to be certified in Australia. And before that, we had a party for him, but it was a work party in the day.
Yeah.
And we had a huge turnout. And then at night, we had this full-on party with, you know, music and food and just all. The neat thing is also the children. Joey has three beautiful little girls, and they know more about permaculture than most adults. I mean, they know what nitrogen fixers are, which we haven't even talked about yet. It's awesome. And Joey homeschools his children, and there's a whole bunch of other children that come, and they're learning about permaculture. They're learning to live close to the land. And, you know, it's so wonderful, because when I was growing up, I had zero exposure to anything like this. And I really think we're making a difference. So, you know, hopefully wherever you're living, you can make a difference too. And if it's just having people come and listening to this show, or, you know, starting a meetup group in your area, even if it's just, you know, gardening, it's all contributing to having a lower or smaller carbon footprint. So, like, instead of buying oranges from California and you live in Florida or wherever, you know, buy local produce, buy locally, and that will help significantly. So,
well,
we have 8 minutes left. We can keep going.
I just something that interests me a lot when somebody's a little, maybe they had a bad gardening experience, they grew some stuff and it died or whatnot, and have a little uneasiness there, maybe, you know, something died. But somebody was talking to me the other day, and I said, here's a quick thing to do that you it guarantees you pretty good success. You buy a bag of potting mix, like just the bag of it. It's to put in the pots to grow plants in. You grab that bag and you buy some vegetable starts that Paul was talking about, where they already grew the seed for you. This is, and we're talking Home Depot here, Lowe's, Home Depot. And you, let's say you buy that tomato plant, or a six pack, they call them. So you get six tomato plants, one bag.
And they're cheap. It's not like you're spending a lot of money.
It's a small investment for a pretty large return. You could almost say you're growing your own money. But let's go back to the, you've got the bag of soil, you cut six holes in it, just a hole large enough to plant the plant in. To start, you punch some holes on the bottom so the bag will drain. So you have holes on the bottom that you punched in, let's say with a pen or something like that, screwdriver. And then on the top, you cut small little squares or whatnot to plant your plants in. And then you water that. You've got a perfect soil mix. You're pretty guaranteed. There's no, the soil itself doesn't have harmful things in it that could, you know, attack the root systems. You don't have a gopher problem. You know, you may have a rabbit problem, but that may not happen with tomato plants. But you have a little area right there that you can monitor, keep it close to your window, close to your door, and just watch that. And it's a fun little, it's not a big commitment. You're not making the garden. You're not digging in the dirt and going all the way. It's a little bag of encouragement.
Right, and that, water. Like for me, that helped me build my confidence. I didn't do that exact technique, but I started it. You know, I thought about it and finally, I have to do it. And I did it, and it helped me build my confidence, and then it just helps you, you know, get started. So now I actually buy seeds, and that's a whole other realm. It's so much fun to get varieties from all over the world and They're an heirloom seed of the seed that's been passed down through the generations, and it's non-GMO. GMO is a whole other topic we can talk about some other day, but it's a food that is healthy for you. It's natural. It's not genetically altered, and you can save the seeds year after year. And so there's so many other good things we can eventually talk about. We want to talk about. We also want to answer your question. So back to that question, I said I would get to it, and we're going to keep it short. We can keep talking, though. Okay, the question it says, is the swale covered or is the water exposed? And if so, does it attract mosquitoes who lay their eggs in still water? This person lives in Canada and says, even if you have a bird bath, it attracts them and you get eaten alive. We don't have a large bat population to contain them. So,
well, if we're talking specifically Canada, and we're talking about an area that freezes, the you would have a winter rain or you'd have a winter snow, and typically the swale actually drains it. The water that would be standing is going to soak into the ground. If what I found is if you do have standing water and it's in the ground and it's over a large surface, like the bottom of a swale or something, if you didn't have bats, you would have frogs. And tadpoles love mosquito larvae. And if you did have this body of water, if you did, which is a very encouraging, if you were to put a swale in and it started to fill up and the water didn't percolate into the ground anymore, that's a good sign. Now you could do a whole nother growing technique in the bottom of that swale because you have an overabundance of water, which is doesn't often happen. So that would be a positive. You can always put mosquito fish in there. You can start raising fish. Now, if you had because if we're talking about the bottom of a swale, that's a lot of water. Now we've just moved.
Yeah, a problem wouldn't be in the swale. Maybe if you had a dam or a pond, then you have more issues because you have standing water.
Well, in a pond or a dam, if you have standing water and you're able to keep it long enough like that, you're raising fish, and fish eat mosquitoes.
Right, and you might think mosquitoes are bad, but that doesn't necessarily mean they are bad. We're trying to actually build diversity within these systems that we're building, because it's an ecosystem. One thing benefits from the other, which benefits from the other, which benefits from the other. So anyway, we're getting at the 2-minute mark. I believe I can continue this. What do you think, Joey? Should we let them wait till next week? Or?
One of us has talked a lot. So I think that.
Which one?
So I think there's a lot of information.
There is.
I mean,
we'll keep them waiting. They'll want to come back next Thursday.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Everyone, we've had a wonderful time tonight. I'm so glad you've been able to listen to my good friend Joey here and myself, Tall Paul. Now, if you wonder why, I'm called Tall Paul because I am 6'7", in case you didn't know. All right. So with that being said, we have a bunch of different episodes scheduled. On Fridays, we have something called Freedom Fridays with Christy Howard. And there we talk about what are your dreams and goals and, you know, how do you, if you want to go to Europe, you can't just go to Europe. You have to plan it out. You know, you have to have a passport photo, application, et cetera. Next week on Tuesday, we have a Hawaiian kahuna princess who will be online, Kalei. That will be another exciting show. That's Tuesday night. So check back often. We love you. We thank you for being here. Please email me at asktallpaul@gmail.com. Any questions or ideas for shows, if you'd like to be a guest speaker, let me know and we'll go from there. All right. Thank you, Joey.
You're welcome. And if you're curious about what we do, it's
yeah.
FruitTreeForest.com has a photos of our place and a little baby chicken that one of the moms hatched, and a different garden bed and some fun pictures on there and what we're doing.
All right. That's fruit.com. and it's with one R, correct?
Which one? Tree?
Fruit, tree, forest. F-O-R-E-S-T.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because sometimes people put two R's.
Oh.
Thank you.